Okay, I think we're live. Let's just set this up. Should be good. Okay. I want to wish everyone a good Thursday evening. It's funny, when you give a drasha, you always say a good Shabbos. And when you call someone, you always wish them a good Shabbos if it's before Shabbos. There was a friend of mine, a relative of mine, who I was calling recently, and they said, oh, you called me before Shabbos. That's, you know, is it a pre-Shabbos call? So I'm like, no, I just want to call you to say hi. So then last week I called him on Thursday and I wished him, I wish you a good Thursday. Hope you have a really meaningful Thursday evening and a Thursday morning, and you're, I don't think you appreciated it, but wish everyone a good Thursday evening, a good Arab Shabbos. When one reads through the pages of American history, our history, with all of our highs and glorious moments, we also have our fair share of low moments, of unfortunate events as well. These regretful episodes are the kind of stories that when we reread them, we instinctually cringe, desperately hoping that somehow the events unfold differently this time around, despite the fact that we already know the ending of these incidents that have taken place decades and centuries ago. One of the most poignant categories of dreadful events in our nation's history have been the albeit uncommon, yet not entirely rare, assassination of our country's presidents. All in all, there have been 4 sitting U.S. presidents assassinated. The first and perhaps most infamous, on April 14th, 1865, radical Confederate sympathizer John Wilkes Booth shot and eventually killed Abraham Lincoln. Less than 20 years later, on July 12, 1881, the deeply delusional narcissist Charles Guiteau shot and killed James Garfield. On September 6, 1901, anarchist Leon Frank Czolgosz shot and murdered William McKinley. And the last one, the one that many people in this room were alive for, not myself. On November 22nd, 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald murdered John F. Kennedy. All of them, tragic deaths that have shaped American history, each in their own way. However, while the motives for the first 3 assassinations are readily clear to historians and sociologists, one remains a little murky. John Wilkes Booth was a Confederate sympathizer, and he blamed Lincoln for the South losing the war, for ruining his country. Guiteau believed that Garfield only won the election for president due to his own efforts on Garfield's behalf, and was thereby deeply offended to the point of murder when Garfield didn't offer him position in his government. Czolgosz was an anarchist, and therefore McKinley, the president, had to go. However, with Lee Harvey Oswald, the picture is a little bit less clear as to what exactly his motives were. Of course, that's due in large part to Oswald himself being killed less than 2 days later after he shot Kennedy. But even without that, his background doesn't provide as clear a picture as to what drove him to commit such a horrific crime. And because of that, his motives are in many ways still foggy and shrouded in mystery to this very day. On this Shabbos, tomorrow, the next day, we will read the Aseres Hadibros, the 10 Commandments. The entire Jewish people gathered at Har Sinai, at Sinai, and God revealed himself to them. And he gave over the 10 most important principles that the Jewish people must know. There is one God, there's a Shabbos, don't murder, don't steal. Each and every one of these commandments play a crucial and fundamental role in God's plan for the Jewish people to be a holy nation dedicated to God's work and to set an example to the world of what an upstanding, moral, and godly society looks like. If any of these 10 commandments would be erased we'd be missing something crucial, something superbly significant, right? Of course, that's why they are the Ten Commandments, not the Nine Commandments or the Eight Commandments. Each one is absolutely necessary and fundamental. Now, I don't want to rain on anyone's Ten Commandments party, but if we study the list of Ten Commandments more closely, one of them does not seem to fit. One appears entirely out of place. I understand how 1 through 9, why the first 9 commandments are extremely important, basic, and fundamental. However, the last one appears to be more of a virtue than a fundamental, a bonus, not a basic. Let's go through the list together. 1 through 3, believe in one God and don't desecrate his name. Fundamental? I would say so. The next, guard the Shabbos, the day we personally attest to God creating the world. Fundamental? Sounds like it. Respect one's parents, establish the importance of the Jewish family and our heritage and traditions. Fundamental? Yeah. Don't murder, don't steal, don't commit adultery or lie in court. All obvious fundamentals. And then there's one more. Lo tachmod. Don't be envious of others' possessions, spouses, or life situations. Now, I understand that it is nice and virtuous not to be envious. But can you really say that this is a fundamental tenet of Judaism? That this deserves to be included in Judaism's top 10 list? I'm confident David Letterman and all his writers, including the Jewish ones, would not have included this. What happened to giving charity, keeping kosher, learning Torah, family purity? How did don't be envious beat out the other 603? Why include the sin of envy in this fundamental group? What is so important about this commandment? And when you think about it, not only is it in the top 10 list, but besides for the first one, you can argue that the second most important one in the list of 10 is the last one, the number 10. After all, it is the last words we heard from God's mouth at Sinai, the final echoes reverberating in our ears. Don't be envious. Don't be envious. Don't be envious. What is so important about it that God wanted to make sure was the last thing we heard? While there is no clear-cut answer to understanding Lee Harvey Oswald's motives, and perhaps there never will be one. However, there is a prominent theory amongst historians and sociologists, one that was already published just a few weeks after JFK's death in the December 2nd issue of Newsweek in 1963. The author wrote, "Kennedy was Oswald's victim because the young prince at the White House was and had everything that Oswald, the perpetual failure, never could be or have." Echoing those comments in 1966 in his landmark work, Envy, A Theory of Social Behavior, German-Austrian sociologist Helmut Schmuck wrote, "The letters and reported remarks of President John F. Kennedy's assassin leave little room for doubt that Lee Harvey Oswald's central motive was envy of those who were happy and successful, and whose symbolic representative he murdered in the person of the young president, a man truly favored by fortune. If one endeavors in the light of available biographical material to understand Oswald's frame of mind, one is forced to conclude," he wrote this, that's what he said, "that he would not have raised his gun against an older, less handsome president married to an inconspicuous wife, and one whose style of life, constantly reported in the press and on television, had not been that of modern royalty. It was pure, unadulterated envy that drove Oswald to kill JFK. And although Lee Harvey Oswald is obviously an anomaly of extreme behavior by a murderous individual, but a sober, An honest look back at our history reveals that the annals of human history are ferociously littered with death, decay, and destruction of both individuals and entire peoples when envy of others' possessions, property, and prosperity are allowed to grow unfettered and unrestrained. It is beneath us to quote the words from hateful historical figures who have convinced the masses time and again that the root of their own problems are because the other has what is rightfully theirs. The claims that we deserve their jobs, their money, their land, their resources, their success, and if we take it by force, so be it, because might is right, have destroyed millions upon millions of lives throughout the history of mankind. At Sinai, God made a thundering call to the Jewish people. God forbid for individuals and society to be continuously tormented and plagued by the emotional, envious whims of jealous people and nations. There can be a brighter path forward. There will be a brighter path forward. The Ten Commandments were the first drops of paint. The Jewish people, the brush, and life itself, the canvas, as God began to paint the tapestry of a more vibrant and colorful world, of a people that would live to a higher ideal, one that would be a shining light to the rest of the world of what godliness looks like, to build a society where envy doesn't remain unchecked, where jealousy isn't allowed to ruin and destroy the lives of individuals, families, friends, communities, or entire nations and civilizations. The Torah, God, understands human nature. And in that vein, perhaps lo tachmod, don't be envious, is the most fundamental of all the commandments, as it provides the foundation, the backdrop for the magnificent vision of what Jewish society can and should be. Because in order for that to come true, in order for that dream to become a reality, God commanded us to confront it at the root, snip it in its bud. Don't allow envy and jealousy to bubble inside. In place of envy, find faith in God. Trust that He has given me what I need in this world. In place of coveting, find happiness and pleasure in appreciating the gifts that we are blessed with. In place of jealousy, find internal harmony and peace. This is the vision of Judaism. This is the clarion call of God. This is the final charge of the Ten Commandments. Good Shabbos.
Shabbos!
Good Shabbos, Rabbi, and thank you.